This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, time for Sharp Money on this Monday afternoon, July 29th. In case you haven't already realized, Patrick Maher not with us today. So I'll be filling in. Joe Serallo here alongside the usual, the mainstay of the show. I'm sure everyone's favorite element of the show, Dustin Sweetelson. Dustin, how you doing today?
My therapist's favorite element of the show, because I just go back and report to her what happened during the week, and she talks me through it. Joe, have you ever gotten the Jason Derulo effect on your name? Because I feel like people should sing your name back to you. I'd start money with Joseph Serulo.
Dude, you know, I'm so glad you pointed that out, because I get that all the time. That was a go-to pickup line for me in college when I'd introduce myself to someone. That's how I would introduce myself. I can't believe that wasn't planned, folks. If you're just, you know, tuning in, watching, listening, that was not planned. And Dustin, that just endeared you to me so deep.
Well, I mean, also, it's a little congratulations. Yeah, an anniversary last night. Big Bucks out in Malibu having a night with the young lady. How many years? 1 year? 2 years? Where are we at?
First anniversary.
Wow. And setting the bar pretty high by going to Malibu, I will say. So the second one's going to have to be a step up. There might be a diamond involved.
Well, I mean, you know, if you think Malibu's fun, we're going to Hawaii next week to celebrate.
That's awesome,
trying
man.
Trying to get all the airtime I can get in with you before I kick it on Waikiki Beach, man. We've got a lot to get to early on in this one, because we're together for 6 of the final 27 hours leading up to Major League Baseball's trade deadline, which means a lot of breaking news today, even more breaking news tomorrow as we'll be on the air right up until the deadline itself. We just had some news come in. Eric Fetty, who went over to Korea last year, reinvented himself, signed a 2-year deal with the White Sox. He's being shipped to St. Louis in a 3-way deal. Tommy Edman going from the Cardinals to the Dodgers. Michael Kopech, the former starter turned reliever, going from the White Sox to the Dodgers, and a slew of prospects going to the south side of Chicago in that deal. That's the breaking news right now. We're going to circle back to it, but we actually have a first pitch that's 2 minutes away, Dustin. Orioles, Blue Jays, game one of a doubleheader, and the debut of a Zach Eflin. What do you like in this game?
All right. One, I love the trade for Zach Eflin to Baltimore long-term, Joe. I think it's a great move, mainly because he's under contract next year and they're likely going to lose Corbin Burns. But as far as his debut goes, he just faced Toronto last week. It's his first start for Baltimore, but faced Toronto with Tampa Bay on Wednesday. 6 hits, 2 earned, 4 strikeouts. You look at what he's done in his career against Toronto, and it's not been good. He's also notoriously bad in the second half. 5.09 ERA in the second half versus 3.93 in his career in the first half. And you look at his numbers versus Toronto specifically. 2-3 record in 8 games, 7 starts, a 5.90 ERA. And I don't trust these Baltimore bats with runners in scoring position of late. I'm going to take a flyer at plus 130 on Toronto in the first 5 with Yariel Rodriguez on the bump, who's been pretty good for them. And the Blue Jays, despite being sellers, just are coming off a sweep of Texas over the weekend. So let's stick with the team that's a little bit hotter here and get the value on the first 5.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, because you mentioned the Blue Jays as sellers, what they do in the next 24 hours or so. Because they've kind of sold off some smaller ancillary pieces, right? Nate Pearson, who, you know, is 2 more years of arbitration eligibility. He got dealt to Chicago. Really weird what the Cubs are doing at the deadline. Danny Jansen staying in the division, the catcher going to Boston, who seemed to carry like 4 catchers on their 26-man roster. It's a little weird. But the Blue Jays, the big names are still there. Vladdy, Bichette. It'll be interesting to see what they do, because they're so far out of it. I like the play. Now, I've got no action in this game, but I like the play because Zach Eflin, you know, he's not as good as he was a year ago with Tampa Bay. He's definitely taken a step back this season, and Toronto has seen him a ton. And whenever you have a recurring matchup, this will be the 4th time this season Eflin is seeing the Blue Jays advantage hitters when you're seeing a guy 4 times in a year. The pitcher always has the edge of the first time, maybe even the second time. Once you're 4 deep, advantage lineup. I like your play here. I think Toronto could definitely get out there, score some early runs. And Baltimore is just, I mean, they burned me so many times last week, man. That Miami series, I had a money line, run line in the game that they led 6-0 and won 7-6. I was cleanly swept in that series, man. They are just, I don't know what's going on in Baltimore. Not the right time. They really could have ran away with the East. And I mean, I'm curious what you think about that division, because Baltimore, I got them plus 210 at the All-Star break to be the one seed in the American League. And they had a chance to really run away with it out of the All-Star break. And they've kind of squandered that opportunity thus far. They can still do it, but so far they've missed an opportunity.
Yeah, one quick note on today. Vlad has great numbers against Eflin. 4-1 to hit a homer, or you can go over 1.5 total bases. It's something I'd consider as well. As far as Baltimore big picture, I don't think they're done, Joe. I think we're going to see some more moves here. You got to remember
that
there's new ownership coming in here. They want to make a splash. They want to capitalize on this opportunity. It's a young core, which means there's not a lot of guys getting paid. So there's an opportunity with the payroll to be a little bit flexible here down the stretch. I'd like to see some veterans added, specifically in the bullpen. Someone who can take that job from Craig Kimbrell, because that cannot be happening anymore if you expect to win the pennant and represent the AL in the World Series. So I think they need another bullpen arm, maybe two, maybe even another starter, just in case, because you got to remember, the deadline's so early. You could still lose a starter somewhere along the way and not have a major league ready arm to replace them. So I'd like to see them add a veteran guy that maybe they stash away at AAA for a while, and then they could use a veteran bat off the bench. There's so much youth. I would like to add a little bit more experience to this team right now. But upside-wise, my favorite thing about backing young teams is I think we underestimate their ability to get better as they get more comfortable, as the season goes on. And I think the Baltimore Orioles have the potential to continue to do that throughout the summer, because I am not buying the New York Yankees. I think that lineup is still shallow, even after the addition of Jazz Chisholm. And while at one point in the year in June, they had the best pitching and hitting in baseball, that pitching has absolutely fallen apart, and I do not trust that rotation, and it starts with Gerrit Cole.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen major regression from Carlos Rodon, who looked great yesterday, but still we've seen a ton of regression from him. Nestor Cortes, Marcus Stroman, even Luis Gil, who's going tonight in Philly at Citizens Bank Park against Zach Wheeler. We've got a play on that one to come. That's going to be a really fun one to dive into. But I agree. And when you're dealing with the youth that Baltimore has, I think something else that you're dealing with is that those guys tend to have shorter memories, right? A loss this time of year might not faze them the same way as a guy who's been around the block, who's like, oh, shoot, you know, historically, if you don't, you know, get up to speed by July 29th, you know, if you're trending in the right, those young kids tend to just go out there and let it rip, right? Like, you're going to make mistakes. I mean, you want to talk about mistakes? Look at Gunnar Henderson when he botched that ball in the ninth inning right off the heel of his mitt when Kimbrel blew the save in Miami. They were up 6-3. By the way, you're spot on with Kimbrel. I mean, how many blown, I know, you know, the ERA was like 2.5 a week ago. Now it's over 3. How many blown saves are we going to endure, and are we going to live through? Forget going outside to get bullpen help, which they should certainly do, but you can make the closer switch right now and put Cano in there. I mean, to me, he's their best reliever. I would make him the closer yesterday if I was Baltimore. Kimbrel, I can't sit through another blown save where if he doesn't get one call from the ump, or if he gives up one hit, or maybe the defense makes a suspect play, it's just he loses all control, will walk the next 2-3 guys, and then it's hell from there.
Yeah, it's really tough for the Orioles because they were banking on Felix Bautista being young and controllable in that closer role for so long. Cano really is better as a setup guy. I think Baltimore knows he's better when they can use him in a higher leverage spot earlier in the game. And a lot of teams have done that of late. Take their best arm, use him in the seventh and eighth, and have someone to close the door. The problem is, Craig Kimbrell's a guy, he's towards the back end of his career. He doesn't have the stuff he used to have. You can put the ball in play, and he throws so hard. If you do, it's going to go somewhere. They desperately need to find a closer out there to take that spot, because Craig Kimbrell cannot be – it's like Russell Westbrook and Russell Wilson. I can't say Craig Kimbrell for some reason. But you cannot use him if you're going to have meaningful games down the stretch.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Not even a 3-run lead – going up against the 6, 7, and 8 hitters of the league's 29th ranked offense is safe if Kimbrel's going out there for the ninth. And I do want to make one note. He did have to get about 5 outs that inning.
Sure.
Because there was the Norby tripping on the ground ball to second base that he was charging. Would have been 2 outs, no one on, first 2 guys retired. And then Gunner boots it. Jake Berger, Kimbrel made a beautiful pitch, would have been 3, ump called it a ball. So everything that could have gone wrong for Kimbrel did go wrong, but still, nonetheless, 6, 7, 8 coming up, do your damn job.
So, also, 6 blown saves for him, that's the most he's had in a season since 2011.
Wow. that's
where were you in 2011, Joe?
2011, I was turning 13. I was wrapping up seventh grade.
That's why I asked that question. That's why I asked that question.
And your point about Baltimore needing a starter, by the way, they absolutely do. Right now, I've been told that they're talking to the Tigers as we speak about a Scooble deal. 2.5 years of control. We all know Baltimore. They want the young guys with the club control. And they need a lefty, I think, specifically, right? You've got Burns. You've got Grayson Rodriguez. Albert Suarez started great. He's come back down to earth lately. Mm-hmm. You know, Cole Irvin hasn't really – it's been really a mishmash of guys because they're missing two key starters, John Means from the left side and Kyle Bradish, who last year was their ace, both out for the year. So you definitely need something beyond Burns, Rodriguez, Dean Kramer, who I didn't mention. You need one more top-of-the-rotation guy, a top-three guy. Scooble gives them a 1A, 1B situation between Burns and him. That would be great. I thought they were going to go for Crochet. I was convinced, you know, 2 weeks ago. But right now, Crochet, with the long-term deal being needed, and now you're seeing some regression there, it's going to be interesting to see whether or not he gets moved, because some teams might look at that and just say, that's too much baggage. We don't want to deal with it. It's wild, because if I'm Detroit, I don't deal Scooble, since he's got 2.5 years of control, and you could be a playoff team next year. But if you're the Orioles, Dustin, go all in, right?
I actually like it for Detroit. The question is, would Baltimore have to give up Jackson Holliday in that trade? I don't think so.
I think they can navigate it without doing that, but I would. If that's what it costs, I would do it. They've got so many bats and they need pitching. I would part ways if it was a one for one. Guys, whole lot more to come. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to Sharp Money on Visa. We are releasing our VSiN College Football Betting Guide this Thursday. This guide is your ultimate resource for the upcoming college football season, including previews of all 134 teams, a preseason top 25, power ratings, and more. So sign up before the end of July and receive both the college football and NFL betting guide, plus full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, and more at the early bird discount of just $1.75. Or sign up on a monthly subscription and get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSiN has to offer to turn up your betting game. Don't miss out. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. As Sharp Money moves along into hour two now, I'm Joe Cirillo in for Patrick Maher. I'll be in for him Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week, so don't just worry. Don't think this is a one-time fling, guys. I'll be here a couple more shows alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And Dustin, I was just telling some of our friends in the back room there when, you know, you got up and you abandoned me during that commercial break that during our interview with Jay Gruden, and, you know, because I'm a cool cat, I played it off. I just got hit with an earthquake here in Los Angeles.
But you got hit with a pretty strong one. 5.1, it looks like, was the magnitude. Yeah. That's pretty legit. So, all right, take me through it. At what point did you feel it and have the realization, oh, this is an earthquake?
So it was really funny because now, you know, I'm from New York, just like you are. Mm-hmm. So we're not used to this. So no. My first, you have to like have your brain trained if you're not from California to be like, oh, wait, it's an earthquake, because it's not something that my brain jumps to quickly. So I'm looking into my webcam here asking Jay the first question in that interview. And all of a sudden, I noticed that my webcam is like, you know, teetering a little bit. And now sometimes it does that when I put it on my laptop, but I'm like, I haven't touched it in an hour and a half, you know? So I'm like, that's weird. I ask him the question, camera cuts away from me. And then I'm on the third floor, which at my apartment building is the top floor. My whole room starts like, it felt like it was swaying back and forth.
Yeah.
Like my stomach is like, I'm on the Tower of Terror at Disney. And I was like, at that point, I was like, oh, crap. Let me go to Twitter, because Earthquake Twitter, I don't know if you've experienced Earthquake Twitter.
Oh.
Earthquake Twitter is a fun place.
I lived in LA for 5 years, so Earthquake Twitter was a way to help me realize I wasn't crazy in the moment of an earthquake, right? Because you don't always understand what it is when it's happening. Usually also when there's one or two more to follow, right? Like you can expect there may be another one, some aftershock. Because I had a weekend once where I was on the 11th floor of a building that I lived on in LA, And we had a really big one where all of a sudden, noticed on the bar cart I had in the living room, all the glasses were clinking together. And I'm like, that's a weird thing to randomly happen. Next thing you know, the whole building was swaying like this, back and forth. And it was really freaking me out. The next morning, I wake up and I hear my roommate's bed banging against my wall. Now, I thought it was him and his girlfriend doing their thing.
I was going to say, hey, your roommate had a good morning.
And then I was like, I'm going to stay quiet here. I'm not trying to listen. I'm not a creep. But then I hop into the hallway to use the restroom while that's going on. And they're both sitting on the couch. And I realize we're in the middle of an earthquake right now.
Jeez. Yeah. It's funny. My first one ever, I had just, my dad was visiting out here. And he was staying in my living room because it was at my last place when I was single. My one-bedroom bachelor pad, you know. And we had just gotten home from a late night out, dinner and drinks with some family out here. And I took a shower. It's like 2:30 in the morning. I'm in the shower and I hear my whole apartment starts to shake. I hear like a little bang. The apartment is shaking. And I'm like, geez, now my dad's, you know, late 60s. It was dark in the, I'm like, this guy just freaking fell. And now, the guy beneath me is going to be annoyed because you hear everything.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, great. So the shower's shaking. I'm thinking my dad fell. I come out and he goes, hey, did you fall in the shower? I heard the shower door banging. I said, no, I thought you fell out here. We look at each other. We're like, earthquake.
It's either earthquake or a ghost.
Right. Well, see, being from New York, I hear the glasses start to tink and clang and everything. And that's what I'm thinking is ghosts.
I also had one when I lived in Washington, D.C., which is unexpected. It actually triggered in New York as well, that same one. And I thought someone was doing it's a, for people who haven't experienced an earthquake, it takes like 15 seconds of it happening to really you're like, oh, this is an earthquake. And somehow you're very aware despite not having gone through it before.
Do you know approximately what year that was when you were in D.C.?
2011-ish, 10.
Okay. So I'm thinking maybe if it was maybe 2012 or so, potentially. I'm thinking because there was one we had in New York and I didn't even notice it. I was playing high school ball.
2011. August 23rd, 2011. I just moved to D.C. to work at SiriusXM.
And I was playing summer ball and had baseball practice. And then when we got picked up, parents were like, are you okay? There was an earthquake and we didn't even notice it. We were just on the baseball field and everything, had no idea. But I remember what you're talking about.
Yeah. It's a weird thing. It's a weird, until you sit through it, you have no idea what's going on and how like real life becomes in the moment.
Yeah. Speaking of baseball, by the way, I wouldn't exactly call this an earth shattering trade. But an encouraging trade was just made during our last break. Actually, it might have been while we were talking to Jay. Justin Turner going from Toronto to the Seattle Mariners. They get another right-handed bat. I thought it was going to be Vladdy. If I saw the Blue Jays and Mariners did a deal, I thought it was going to be Vladdy. But Justin Turner giving Seattle a little more pop and what's been just a dreadful lineup for a team that has maybe the best pitching in baseball, Dustin.
Yeah, look, I know these aren't sexy moves, but first the Arozarena deal adds offense to a team that desperately needs bats. But also I think what's key with Randy Arozarena is playoff experience, right?
Boom,
he's been there before with St. Louis and Tampa. He dominated a postseason. Now you go get Justin Turner. Justin Turner, a veteran who's been through a lot of postseason games, still crushes left-handed pitching, had a hit today against Baltimore, so I'm guessing they took him out of the lineup. I'm going to go look because I'm about to take a flyer on the Mariners. If they add maybe one more bat and I can get it before this number moves, I think 25, I'm going to see if I can find 30-1 somewhere. I want 30-1. I see 25. Yep.
I just saw that James McCann hit by pitch
on my
TV in the background, and that was like disturbing to watch.
He stayed in the game though.
Yeah, he's tough. He dealt with all the boos in New York, so he's got to be tough.
Well, yeah, that was a harder hit than any hit he had in New York. I can tell you that.
He was so bad with the Mets. My goodness.
Let's see what Circa has.
Seattle needs to go get like a Vladdy.
No, they do, but at the same time, I do think with that pitching, you just need to slightly improve. You also have to assume Julio Rodriguez can step up in the playoffs and be a different player power-wise than he's been in the regular season. I do think there's an opportunity for that team to be better. And also, I think there's an aspect where I was talking about the Cardinals being better built for the long haul of a season. The Mariners could be built better for the postseason, the regular season, just because the arms are going to throw at you. And I also like the addition they made of Yimi Garcia the other day to strengthen that bullpen. So I do think pitching is emphasized in October, and rightfully so.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you on the Mariners. They're one of those teams, every year there's a couple teams where you don't know if they're going to make the playoffs, but if they do, they can do some damage, right? Like the 2015 Mets, they made the playoffs with the worst record of any of the five National League teams to make it, but they had the pitching and they ended up coming out of the league. Hey, only about 2.5 minutes left here. I know, you know, we've got big slates. You've got what, 6 bets? You already gave one out, but you've got about 6 bets on your baseball slate today. I've got 5. Let's hit on a game since we're talking about the Mariners that we both have action on. 2 of my 5 bets are actually in this game. I believe one of yours is. Dustin, I don't do this often, but I've got a same game parlay I love. I was willing to lay the $1.50 on Logan Gilbert over 5.5 strikeouts. He's pitched to better than 10 Ks per nine this year. He's about an inning, a K per inning guy, a little better than a K per inning. But this season, he's going deep into ball games, and the Red Sox strike out 3rd most of any team in baseball at home, 2nd highest K rate at 9.5 per game at Fenway. They're actually worse at home this year than they've been on the road. So Gilbert, if I was going to lay the $1.50 for over 5.5 strikeouts, you just add Seattle money line to that. And on BetMGM, I got +210 for Gilbert over 5.5 Ks, Mariners money line. What are your thoughts on the same game parlay? What's your play for this?
No, we're on the same page here. I love Seattle today. I think it's they're the side here. We're getting a discount on the better pitcher because the assumption is the offense for the Mariners won't come through. But there's a lot of reasons to think Seattle has a chance to knock some off the big wall in Fenway. First of all, Seattle, I know, is against Chicago. They're coming off a series where they average 7.33 runs per game. And I know it's the White Sox, but that's still Major League bats doing what they need to do. I like them carrying that over into this series. And Nick Pivetta's on the bump. He's gotten hit around by these Seattle hitters for his career. They have a combined 1,100 OPS against him. At -105, you're not usually going to get an opportunity to back the better pitcher in Logan Gilbert in a spot like this. So I'll take that discount and back Seattle.
Now, one more play in this game from my end. I'm with you on Seattle having success against Pivetta. But Pivetta's been pretty good in the first inning this year. Not his last start, but that was at Coors. You can call that, you know, Coors Field's just different. 4 straight nerfies for Pivetta prior to that. Logan Gilbert, 19 nerfies and 21 starts this year. I took the nerfie, only had to lay $1.30. So give me the nerfie, give me that same game parlay at +210. Give Dustin the Mariners money line. Guys, we've got more bets, more winners to come only right here on Sharp Money.
Rolling along here, Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. Joe Cirillo will be back momentarily. We've got a lot of stuff we have to get to throughout the next hour and a half on this program. Obviously, the baseball trade deadline happening as we speak. For those that missed it, a big 3-way trade earlier today involving the Los Angeles Dodgers acquiring Tommy Edman from St. Louis, Michael Kopech from the Chicago White Sox. The Cardinals in the deal get Eric Fetty from Chicago along with outfielder Tommy Pham, and the White Sox get a couple prospects from the Dodgers and Miguel Vargas, an infielder, has been moved around the corner spots and second base to help them in this long rebuild there. We have some baseball I'll touch on later in the show, some games, a bunch of bets across the board, including a no-win parlay is back for your boy. That's where we take 3 pitchers we think will not record a win for their team, parlay them together, and today's at a nice juicy plus price. More on that later, but first, I want to talk a little college football, because as we've been promoting here on VSiN over the course of the last week, our college football betting guide comes out on Thursday, which meant I had to sit there and do all my deep dives a little bit earlier than I expected when it comes to college football. And I have to tell you, I think we're all underestimating the chaos that a 12-team college football playoff format is going to bring to this sport. I know we want to get lost in the sauce when it comes to NIL and the transfer portal and that impact, but I do think this 12-team playoff format has made things crazy, because we've been conditioned over the years going all the way back to the BCS, where our mindset was one loss and the season is over. And I don't see that playing out that way anymore. Some of these teams have a little bit of wiggle room. And with that, I do think it opens up some opportunities to find some conference champions, because in the SEC's case, you could lose to another SEC team, still make the playoff, because let's be real. When this committee of human beings sits down and they choose the best 12 teams to make this college football playoff, what they're going to do is overvalue at the SEC. We've seen that time and time again. The SEC teams lose to other SEC teams. They don't get knocked down as far as maybe a Big Ten, or in this case this year, the Big 12 will look like if they lose to each other. So I do think, because the opportunity for so many SEC teams to be in the mix, I saw a number on a team that I thought was a must fire. And you can come down on either side of this head coach if you want, but Lane Kiffin is indeed a polarizing figure when it comes to college football. We have some people who look back at Lane Kiffin and the way things went in his earlier tries at being a head coach at Tennessee, at USC, and with the Raiders, and they think that's who he's always going to be. And I get it. I completely understand where you're coming from, but I do believe people learn. I do believe people grow. I do believe that Lane Kiffin was a head coach who was humbled at one point, had to go to Florida Atlantic and reinvent himself, had to go be a coordinator in Alabama and Tuscaloosa and learn under Nick Saban. And I think Nick Saban would be honest with you and tell you that as much as he rubbed off on Lane Kiffin and his personality, his humor, his way of lightening the mood, also rubbed off on Nick Saban to a degree based on the stories that I'm seeing. And I say all that to say this. Lane Kiffin did something very pointed last year. I don't know if you guys remember, but Ole Miss hyped up in the rankings. A team on the rise, very obviously. They get smoked by number 2 Georgia in Athens, 52-17. So what does Lane Kiffin do after that game? He doesn't sulk. He doesn't blame people. What he does is he speaks to the media. He uses the media to get to his boosters. He says, quote, "We've got to recruit at a higher level. We've signed 1 5-star. They've signed 24. It kind of shows up at some point. We would have to recruit at a better level, do a better job of recruiting," end quote. That's in getting up to the level that Kirby Smart's gotten the Georgia Bulldogs over the years, with a couple national championships in tow. And here's the thing. Lane spoke, and the boosters answered his call. They hit the transfer portal harder than anyone we've ever seen do so in this new age college football. What Lane Kiffin did was he called out his boosters. He said, "I need more support." They go out and add a former 5-star recruit, Walter Noen. Noen was at Texas A&M, kind of wasting away there, but good on the defensive side of the football. They go out and they grab Florida defensive end transfer, Princely Umamalin. He was second team All-SEC a year ago, had 7 sacks. They lost a running back in the transfer portal over to Ohio State, who also made a lot of moves in the portal. But they replaced him with a bevy of options in New Mexico's Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt and Miami's Henry Parrish Jr., both very productive at the collegiate level. The offensive line, that's always an issue in the SEC, because the SEC is producing all those elite pass rushers you see year after year in the NFL. Well, they add 2 guys to protect their quarterback, Jackson Dart from Washington. Well, why is that relevant? I know Washington had a great year, right? Well, there's an award called the Joe Moore Award. And the Huskies won the Joe Moore Award for the best offensive line in all of college football. Who he's going to protect is a guy who I believe, and Joe Cirillo believes, can be a Heisman contender in Jackson Dart. So we bring Joe back into the show after a bit of a internet issue here. And Joe, I want to just bring you up to speed of where I'm at. I've been breaking down Ole Miss. And yeah, I think there's opportunities in this 12-team format to look at Ole Miss as a team that can make the college football playoff, that can win the SEC at plus 650. The reason I was going into, one, Lane Kiffin, getting the boosters to pony up the cash, bring in all of these 5- and 4-star recruits in the transfer portal, but more importantly, the schedule in the 12-team playoff. So I don't think Georgia's ever been given an opportunity like this before to have a mulligan, right? To have a chance to lose a game and still be playoff bound. Well, Ole Miss hosts Georgia this year, And I think it's a very different version of Ole Miss this season. Because of that, I think the SEC on November 9th could come down to that matchup. Ole Miss, Georgia, in the Grove, in Oxford, Mississippi. Because of that, I'm taking a shot at the Rebs to win the SEC at plus 650.
Wow, I love it. First off, Dustin, can you hear me okay?
I got you, man. I got you loud and clear.
Okay, awesome. So that schedule is what jumped out at me. And I think that, you know, we've talked about, you know, obviously the ad reads and the promos for the college football betting guide coming up. Ole Miss is a team I believe you and I both are featured discussing in this betting guide. And it's all because of that schedule for me. You look at, you talk about mulligans, right? Georgia being able to drop the game. Ole Miss, I think that game to me is, you know, either side could lose that game and still be a part of this expanded 12-team college football playoff. That game to me, though, I'm not as high on Ole Miss to win the SEC at plus 650 as I am when I look at that game and I look at the schedule and I say there is value with Jackson Dart to win the Heisman because of this schedule. Because I look at that game against Georgia and I say, what do you need to win the Heisman Trophy? You need a narrative, right? You need a wow moment. That game against Georgia would be Jackson Dart's Heisman moment. Even October 12th in Baton Rouge, that could be Jackson Dart's Heisman moment. Now, LSU doesn't have the leeway, the wiggle room, you know, in losing that game that Ole Miss would have because it's a road game for the Rebels. But Jackson Dart has two games here that are Heisman moments. And then outside of those two games, a really, I'll say, easy, winnable schedule. I think everything just shapes up for Ole Miss to go over 9.5 wins and for Dart to be a worthy Heisman play at a 16-1 was the best price I got.
Yeah, so I'm with you on that bet. I'm with you on over 9.5. I love them to win the SEC. I just think the number is perfect. A couple notes on Jackson Dart. Five of the last six quarterbacks to win the Heisman Trophy were transfers. Jackson Dart originally started at USC. The one outlier was Bryce Young in 2021. Of that group, four of them ended up taking the trophy home after being at their school for at least one season prior. Mayfield and Murray at Oklahoma did it in their third seasons there. You have to remember Murray had a redshirt season. Burrow and Jaden Daniels won their second seasons at LSU. And then last year's Heisman Trophy, the voting ended with three multi-year starting transfer quarterbacks finishing 1, 2, 3. Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix, Bo Nix. What does that tell you? A couple things. One, quarterbacks in today's college football are hired guns. They can go to the best situations, the best fits for them. But it also goes to show you that despite the portal being so prevalent, continuity does matter. So coming back to the same system for multiple years does heed positive results. Because of that, Jackson Dart's a guy who's a big-time recruit. He can use his legs, which pads those rushing stats, those rushing touchdowns, to add to what he's going to do through the air. You factor that in with the receiving core. He returns back. They bring in a kid from South Carolina and Antoine Wells. I think everything shapes up for Jackson Dart to be one of my three or four favorite Heisman Trophy bets this year.
Yeah, I couldn't love this play anymore, man. And it's also because of his competition, right? You look at the rest of the class, and Dylan Gabriel at plus 750 is the betting favorite. That's not a number I'm going to take with Dylan Gabriel. Similar to Carson Beck at, I believe, 8-1. I just, you know, Beck plays on the best team. He'll have a great defense. I don't think Carson Beck is a Heisman caliber quarterback, right? If there's one guy that the further I look down this list that I look at and say he's got Heisman stuff, it's Cam Ward. But he doesn't play on the right team, in my opinion, to be under consideration. Jackson Dart, everything kind of clicks there. You mentioned what he does with his legs. 32 touchdowns in the air a year ago. Only 5 picks, by the way. 8 more on the ground. It's a 40-touchdown season. He does it again. He's got a real shot. Don't go anywhere, guys. Sharp money rolls on after this. Previews, predictions, and pro, as in become a VSiN Pro subscriber and get an all-access pass to our betting tools, betting splits, and the 2024 College Football Betting Guide. Thursday's release of the College Football Guide and our previously released NFL Betting Guide will have you ready to turn a profit on the gridiron this year. The only way to get the guides and everything we have to offer here at VSiN is to be a VSiN Pro subscriber. So head on over to VSiN.com/subscribe right now and become one. As we keep it moving here, hour three of Sharp Money. Patrick Maher out right now. Joe Cirillo, that's me, in alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And Dustin, it's time for three up, three down, my man. Let's look at who's hot and who's not.
Joseph Cirillo. We should just have a drop for that every time you say your name. All right. It's obviously Paul Skeens Day. And Paul Skeens has been hot, I don't know, going back like 3 years now with that mustache, but hot in Major League Baseball since he made his debut. And just want to look at over his last four starts, what he's done. And by the way, Joe, I want to point out, I tried fading this guy a couple months ago in the Rookie of the Year market, thinking the Pirates would be out of it and shutting him down. So I was all over Yamamoto to win the NL Rookie of the Year. What happens? Yamamoto makes one more start, hits the IL. Paul Skeens, just the trajectory, just all the way up. This is how dominant this guy's been. Over his last four, 28 and a third innings pitched, 36 strikeouts, a .67 whip, four quality starts, 36 Ks, as I mentioned. He's taken on the Houston Astros. We want to find out how legit Paul Skeens is. Let's see how he does against this veteran lineup. And I think he's going to do well, and the props would tell us he's going to do well. Strikeouts prop set at 7.5 over at DraftKings, over plus 115, under minus 145. I think he has a chance to go over that. I'm not a big strikeout props guy, but I do think he can miss some bats here, taking on Jake Bloss on the other side, where somehow, Joe, the Pittsburgh Pirates are a favorite at Minute Maid Park.
In Houston. Isn't that crazy, Dustin? Who would have thought?
Yeah, it's crazy.
When you look at how to cap this, what's intriguing to me, I always find it really interesting when you've got different numbers at some of the big shops, right? So Paul Skeens, oh, actually, it's moved back. It was 7.5 across the board. FanDuel, for a minute, had lowered it to 6.5, laying $1.50 to the over. It's back 7.5 plus 105 to the over. I'm curious, though, even though that's no longer a possibility, where do you sit on that? If you were going to bet the K-prop, would you want the plus money and go with him to get 8 strikeouts, which, I mean, he's gotten eight or more in 8 of his last 9 starts? Or would you want to play it safe, lay the extra juice, and go 6.5? Because Houston is one of the toughest teams to strike out in baseball. Third toughest team to K at home, just 6.75 Ks per game. Which way, which angle would you take to that? And then I'll get into my official bet that I have on this game.
What was that juice on 6.5?
Minus 150 versus plus 105 for the extra strikeout.
I don't love laying 150 juice on player props. He might be one player I wouldn't mind doing it on in that regard. But here's the thing you have to understand about betting player props in any sport. There's more working against the over than there is working on the under. Meaning he could get hit by a line drive and get taken out of the game. He could tweak something in his hamstring, get taken out of the game. There's a lot that can go wrong where you could end up losing it on the over. The under always has the edge and like weird things happening. Because of that, I don't love paying 150 juice, but I'd rather have the number of 6.5 with a guy like him who's gone over that number pretty regularly in his major league starts. So in this one case isolation, I'll take Paul Skeens at over 6.5 minus 150.
Yeah, now last time 6.5 was available on Skeens, I actually took it. It was against the Braves. I might have laid $1.50, come to think of it. And he had 6 going into his last inning. What did he do? Strike out the side, finished with 9. Like I said, he's gone for 8 or more in 8 of his last 9. But the K-prop isn't where I'm going with this one. It's over 18.5 outs at plus 110. This is a guy who's gone for 21 or more outs, or actually 20 or more. He's gone over this mark, nonetheless, in 3 straight and 4 out of 5. Now, Skeens is pretty economical and pretty efficient. We've seen him strike out 11 in 8 innings, right? So it's not like strikeouts equal an absurdly high pitch count for this guy. But let's say Houston isn't striking out much because they don't at home. Like I said, 6.75 per game. They put the ball in play. Well, that means Skeens is probably going to be recording outs at a quicker rate than if his strikeouts were through the moon. So I'm going to take Skeens over 18.5 outs. If the Pirates win this game, he's probably going to have to give them 7 stud-filled innings, and at plus money, that's the play I'm going with. Dustin, what do you think? Outs recorded, Ks, which do you like more? If it's the same plus 110, is it the over 7.5 Ks or the over 18.5 outs?
I'd still go back to the strikeout just because that's what he does, and there's some power bats in that Houston lineup, could swing and miss. I'm concerned about outs recorded just because this is a deeper lineup than most pitchers are used to facing. And oh, by the way, they're kind of heating up at the right time. As someone who has 18-19 to 1 on them to win the World Series, loved what I saw with them against the Dodgers over the weekend offensively. I think these bats are coming to alive. So I'd stay away from the outs recorded, go towards the strikeouts, because, I mean, he could get 6 in the first, three innings.
That's true. Hey, look, we could talk about Paul Skenes all day, but the segment's called Three Up, Three Down. Let's get to our second up. Minnesota, that lineup against left-handed pitching. They take on our Mets tonight, Dustin. What are the Twins doing to lefties this year?
So they're crushing left-handed pitching. They are first in OPS. They are first in batting average, 12th in home runs. But again, that's about opportunity because that's just accumulating for the year. Per game, they're as good as anyone in hitting home runs against lefties. Royce Lewis is healthy. Jose Miranda is back in the lineup. He's healthy. Those are two notorious lefty killers in this lineup. They're on the road taking on the Mets. They're even money against Jose Quintana. Jose Quintana is mid, if mid ever had a definition, in a dictionary. He is a middle of the rotation back end guy, and he's just not special, doesn't have dominant stuff. And I think Minnesota's going to hit him around. And another element in this game and why I'm backing the Twins today, Simeon Woods Richardson, he's a former Mets prospect traded to the Twins. Because of that, I like that little revenge angle. I like Minnesota's offense better than our Mets. I'll take even money on a team I think that's going to do a lot of work offensively today.
Woods Richardson went to Toronto back in that deal. I got the Mets' Marcus Stroman. Remember that once upon a time? Third up, we already talked about him a little bit. The Seattle Mariners against Nick Pivetta.
Yeah, shout out to Anthony Kay, also a part of that deal. Look. Seattle Mariners offense bolstered a bit by a Rosarena trade the other day. Also at Justin Turner today. He won't be available, obviously. The Seattle bats came alive against the White Sox over the weekend. I expect them to continue to do some hitting. Nick Pivetta against the Mariners does not have very good numbers. In a 61 at-bat sample size, it's not massive. These Seattle hitters have a 311 average, 6 homers, 9 ribbies, and a 1,200 OPS. Because of that, I do like the Mariners with Logan Gilbert on the bump as a minus 105 bet today. I think you're getting a massive discount on the better pitcher. And oh, by the way, the hitters in this lineup that's been light hitting of late this year, they have good numbers against Pivetta.
Yeah, and by the way, don't rule Justin Turner out. I think just
that's
for the history
fair.
Making part of it, going from Baltimore to Boston, if they even just get him a pinch hit AB, that would be insane. Imagine he records two hits for two teams in one day. How about three down, Dustin? Jameson Taillon going for the Cubs. He's had a great year. He's a hot name at the deadline right now. Why is he on our three down list?
All right, this jumped out to me. Taillon at Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati. He has been absolutely abysmal, by the way. Minus 112 on him, minus 108 on the Reds and Carson Spires. But Taillon at Cincinnati in his career, 43 innings, a 6.07 ERA, a 1.51 whip. I'm not saying you can back Cincinnati in this spot, but it's a game where I'd think about that over 9 right now.
Ooh, okay. I like it. In all fairness, by the way, Dustin, you know, as a former pitcher myself, Great American Ballpark, impossible place to pitch. So well, I cut him a little slack there.
That's why when I saw Ty France was traded there today, I said, oh, that's interesting because he used to be a good contact guy. Maybe there's more power there.
Oh, yeah. 90 seconds left here. These two kind of go hand in hand for three down. You got the Nationals lineup against left-handed pitching. And then the Nationals starter tonight, Mitchell Parker, your second and third down.
Yeah, and I should note, I'm not just doing these based on my bets, but doing these helps me come up with my bets. And these next two involve, as you mentioned, the Nats and the Diamondbacks game, where Jordan Montgomery's $1.62 favorite at home, taking on Mitchell Parker, plus 136. The total set at 9. The Washington Nationals, they don't hit lefties, and Mitchell Parker's been bad of late. Over his last 5 starts, Parker's got a 7.89 ERA, a 1.57 whip, been getting knocked around. Now he's on the road in Arizona. Ball should fly, except off the Washington bats, Joe, where they are 24th in average against southpaws. They are 29th in home runs and 28th in OPS. I like backing the D-backs if you can in this one. Fade Washington.
Boom. I love it. And oh, by the way, Dustin, this is set up beautifully to lead me into my fifth and final MLB play of the evening because it's Mitchell Parker over 2.5 earned
love it.
Runs. I laid the $1.30 on this one. He's gone over this in 3 of 4, in 4 of 6, and in 6 of his last 8 on the road. Arizona, probably a top 3 hitters ballpark with that dry air in all of baseball. And oh, by the way, this lineup against left-handed pitching, 6th in team OPS. 2nd and runs batted in. We need runs. We need earned runs. Over 2.5. Lay the $1.30. On the other side, Gary Sheffield Jr. Don't go anywhere, guys. It's Start Money on VSiN.